Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Our first story tonight comes from author Aaron Shotwell, entitled The Hidden Things. The blacklight in my hand told me things that I should never have known, word by word, over a month's grim fascination. It had been 3 days and not a word from the man in room 304. Not a single cent for his stay, either. I made my way to his room that morning, intending to collect. When he hadn't answered my knocks and demands to open the door, I let myself in with a spare key. The lights were off, and it was strange. The room was darker than it should have been on such a cloudless day. As I stepped through the door, I was met with a gasp of stale air, the stink of wet, rotted meat. Then I saw the twisted thing in the corner, a thing that used to be the occupant of 304, before he died a clearly unclean, unnatural death. I won't describe how it looked. I can't even stomach the mental picture for long. But I will say that the human body shouldn't be able to bend like that. The police taped off the doorway, and I wasn't allowed in, of course. But as they escorted me away, I saw one last thing through the lit door frame. The walls. They were covered in writing that I couldn't quite make out. Not penned, but painted. Painted, in an all-too-familiar telltale red. It was a few days before I could force myself to return to the room, but it needed a turndown, and I couldn't ignore it any more. I told myself to just file it away in the old mental archives, out of sight, out of mind. Just do your job, business as always, and keep out of other people's affairs. That's how you keep your sanity in this business. I'd been running that hotel for quite a few years, and that wasn't the first crazy thing I'd seen, though, admittedly, it was the most unsettling. I tried to keep my head down, just focus on cleaning and getting out as quickly as I could, but my curiosity got the best of me on my way out. As I turned out the lights, in the pale mid-afternoon sunlight pouring through the door left ajar, I saw a slight residue where the writing used to be. Just a few words, and I could barely make them out. The hidden things. I didn't fight it anymore. I had to know. I returned to that room with a blacklight in hand, scanning the walls for answers, and the text returned in a ghostly blue. It was written in blocks and strips, all at strange angles, sometimes overlapping, sometimes large and bold, and other times fine and hardly legible. There were strange drawings, strange symbols, and sometimes just streaking handprints. It covered all of the walls, even the ceiling. I don't know what compelled me, but I couldn't stop. I reasoned that it was just out of respect for the dead, that somebody should hear his last words, but in truth, I wasn't so humanitarian. I just needed, to keep reading. I needed the closure. It took me a month to compile it all. I feel the need to tell someone about it, what I found, so I will leave it here for those who wish to know. As for me, this is the last I'll bother with it. I've already given it more attention than I should, lost too much sleep over it. You can take it as it is, or make of it what you will. I'm too tired to care any more. They haunt those who know of them, and they claim those who have wronged them. I've learned this much, and that's why I know I'll never escape. I should have left it alone. I was better off not knowing. I should have ignored the voices when they came, but I tried to fight back. I've opened too many doors that should have remained closed. I should have just left it alone. A voice chortles from the bottom dresser drawer, a hideous noise of throaty snorts, crackling consonants and airy vowels. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. It laughs at me. They never show themselves in the light, these terrible things. So I take refuge in these sickly, fluorescent yellow rays from dirty lamps. Every bulb in this room burns brightly through blotchy nicotine stains and dust. I sit alone on a tacky couch before an ancient television set, another source of precious light. Even the stupid little clown face nightlight and the bedside power outlet shines dimly, like some child's memento from a family road trip. His parents probably encouraged him not to be afraid of the dark, saying there were no such things as ghosts, no monsters under the bed. There is no boogeyman, I tell myself, just as that boy likely told himself many times before many sleepless nights. Few adults would understand. I do. Boogie boogie. How long do you think you can hide? Hide, can you think you do how long? Asks a demented, screeching thing from beneath the storage trunk in the corner of the room. It skitters back and forth with a horrible scratching sound. Not a spider, too soft and fat. Not a rat, too many legs. I can see its innumerable eyes glinting in the dark, black beads without compassion. I try not to answer the terrible things. If I do not answer them, I often hope, maybe they'll go away. Maybe they'll leave me alone. But they never do. I can hear them rattling in the space below the sink, crawling behind the stove, scratching at the closet door. I can hear them chattering in the cupboard, slithering beneath the rug. I pull my feet up on the couch and hug my knees, a childish coping mechanism. I know it won't help. This light is not for you, not for you, taunts a childlike voice from behind the couch cushion, giggling cheerfully. I can hear that I feel a tiny hand touch my shoulder, the cold caress of a long-dead stillborn. I brush it away in a panic and curl up on my side, wide-eyed and frozen. I shelter myself in a fetal position, and I listen to the air from the room's darkest cracks and crevices. Silence. Deafening silence. Unbearable silence. They can't fool me. I know they're still here. I can hear my own quickened breath. Hyperventilation takes me, and the room begins to spin in a whirl of smudged colors and shapes. I close my eyes tightly, and I hear them skittering from every corner of the room. I feel them crawling over me, passing strokes and taps from talons, pinchers, fingers, toes, and other limbs and digits that I can't identify. I open my eyes with a gasp, like surfacing for air, and they're gone. I stare into the emptiness of the well-lit room, and they laugh at me maniacally from their hidden places. The teeth, my teeth, they chatter with fear, and my eyes well with tears. Leave me alone, I plead quietly, though I feel like I'm talking to myself. They listen, they always listen, but they delight in madness. The lights dim and flicker, and I hear the hidden things gnawing anxiously at the walls and at the floor, and in my head. Not long now, now long not. You'll soon join the ones forgot, sings the lyrical gentleman at the windowsill, the voice of a twisted Cheshire cat. Its claws squeal and creak against the filthy glass. A chill runs down my spine, and for a moment I forget to breathe. Turn the lights out, boy, demands a familiar voice like a distant recording, crackling like an old radio. My dead father speaks from the gurgling depths of the toilet bowl. This electric bill's highway robbery. Turn the lights out when you're not in the room. Money don't grow on trees, boy. I hear the toilet flush, and the lights begin to flicker and flash one after another. The terrible hidden things laugh at me. They taunt me, mock me. I clutch desperately at my temples and grit my teeth. But I'm in the room, Dad. I'm alone in here, I reply. A voice from the clown-faced nightlight prods at my mind like a yapping dog, some foul hellhound. Are you? Are you? Are you really? Are you? It asks in repetitive torment, and the plastic coloring of its skin seems to peel and melt away. I avert my eyes. This is not happening. This is impossible, and I will not believe it. I have to stay in control. I can't let myself go mad. A voice from the darkness in my left shoe near the bed hears my thoughts. Mad, bad, glad, sad. Titter-tatter, pitter-patter, mad as a hatter. It teases with a shrill voice like a squealing hog. I shake my head, sobbing violently, as I try desperately to ignore the chaotic chatter of the hidden things. I lose myself in memory, the hindsight of pitying people like me, the haunted ones, thinking them crazy. They were alone in their suffering, always alone. The world could never understand. Are these things real? Are they only in my head, some disturbance of the mind? Honestly, I'm not sure that it really matters anymore. The lights flicker, dim, and die at last. I can hear them declare their presence turn by turn, a prologue for the coming slaughter.
"Way,"
says the gruff voice from the bottom drawer.
"Arr,"
says the demented creature from beneath the storage trunk.
"Legion,"
says the child from behind the couch cushion.
"Four,"
says the gentleman at the windowsill.
"Way,"
says the voice of the melting clown.
"Arr,"
says the monster in my shoe.
"Many,"
says my father from the toilet bowl. I hear them converge on me in the darkness, a terrifying clatter blanketing every surface in the room. No escape. I can only wonder what they will find of me after the hidden things have had their way. I wonder if there will be anything left to find. That is where the text seemed to end. Or at least it was all I bothered to look for. I walled off the room after that. I wanted it forgotten. But one thing still hangs in my mind. I saw it just as I was about to close the door for the last time. It was a tiny message scrawled on the carpet. It wasn't written in blood, but something black and sticky. I keep telling myself that it must have been something I missed, though I don't know how I could have. Not with all of the times I'd been in that room since the incident. I hope that's all it is, because if it's not, then that would mean it was left for me. Run or fight for all your might. Hush the creatures of the night. Spare us not this dreadful light. We shall hide ourselves from sight. Stay the while, but for your crime, at death knell's chime, we will claim your soul in time. They haunt those who know of them, these hidden things, and they claim those who have wronged them.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You can live out your MasterChef dream when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Our final story tonight comes from an anonymous author. The story is entitled Midnight Train. In my old age, I've seen a lot of things. Some things I'm a little more proud of than others. As a boy, there wasn't a damn thing that could satisfy my appetite for the world around me. Everything in reach, I had to get my hands on, take it apart, and study it. My natural curiosity is what got me into the many scraps and situations of my youth. I remember when I wasn't any older than six, In the fall of 1928, me and several of the local boys were out playing a game of hide-and-seek. Denny Louie was the seeker, and a damn good one at that. So I took it upon myself to find a damn good hiding place. I remembered the hayloft out in the barn, and I figured I could hide myself among the many bales of hay up there. Or maybe even push some of the bales around, like I had times before when I wanted to build a fort. That way I could secure myself a perfect hiding space. Denny started counting out loud from 100, and I took off running to the barn, the harvest-scented breeze tickling my cheeks. I ran through those big red doors, and my eyes fell on Denny Louie's mama laying on the ground, straw in her hair and her dress hiked up, with my daddy laying on top of her, looking like he was trying to pick himself up, but he seemed to be having trouble. I had no idea what I was seeing, but I would later learn all about what my daddy was doing when I was 14. That was when me and Sandra Hannigan made our way up to the same hayloft where I had hid so many times and made so many forts to get out of the rain. Sandra shook the water from that beautiful blazing red head of hers and caught me staring at her longingly as she stood there, slick and statuesque in the cold, wet air. There, in the smell of spring rain and manure, I made love for the first time. Beautiful girl she was. "Daddy!" My little voice rung out, echoing off the dusty wooden walls. My old man turned and stared at me like he'd been caught dipping his hand into the honey pot, and for lack of better words, that's pretty much what he'd been doing. He hoisted himself off Miss Louie and made his way over to me. "What are you doing in here, son?" He spoke slowly and calmly. "We was playing hide-and-seek, Daddy. I was going to hide up in the loft." "Yeah? You ain't going to be telling nobody what you saw, right, boy?" I could hear the anger rising up in his voice, but I kept on pushing it like the curious little boy I was. "Well, what exactly was you doing, Daddy?" He just stared at me, his eyes slowly growing darker in the brightness of that fall day. Mrs. Louie, still a ways behind him, was up on her feet, straightening her dress and picking bits of straw from her long golden hair. I was too busy looking at Mrs. Louie to notice that my daddy meandered his way over to the wall, where he kept the tools and picked out a hefty, dirt-encrusted shovel. "You ain't going to be telling nobody, right, boy?" he repeated in that slow and calm way he always spoke when he was angry. But me being the stupid child I was, I just kept right on prying. "Daddy, what was?" I didn't have a chance in the world to ask before the right side of my cheek exploded with pain as I fell to the ground in a pathetic bundle. My vision went cloudy. All noise became muffled as if the world suddenly got sucked into a vacuum. What I could hear seemed distant, ghostly even. I could hear Mrs. Louie screaming her pretty head off, and strangely, the long, low whistle of a train in the distance. Whether it was my imagination or not, I don't know. But I've learned in life that there are no coincidences. I heard that whistle as clear as I could hear Mrs. Louie screaming. I heard that train. Lord help me, I heard it. "You ain't gonna be telling nobody, you hear?"
Daddy, I...
Another explosion erupted as my father brought the shovel down onto my exposed chest. I heard several pops and cracks echoing throughout my body. I held up my small arms in defense, but they crumpled like paper under the force of his blow. I dared to raise my hands up for protection again, only to see my fingers crooked and bloody. Mrs. Louie was no longer screaming, but babbling on like she'd seen a ghost. My father turned to her and waved his weapon.
"Shut up, woman," he yelled. "Shut the hell up."
His voice was like that of an angry god. While he was distracted, I tried to crawl away with my crushed fingers clawing at the straw and earth, attempting to pull myself to freedom. It was all for naught, though, as my father grabbed me by the leg and threw me toward the ladder, to the loft.
"It's just a boy, Clay, just a boy,"
Mrs. Louie kept muttering.
"He didn't do nothing wrong."
I said, "Shut up." He spoke again with that godlike force. He swung the shovel down on me again. I heard a very loud crack, almost like lightning skimming across the sky. Very faintly, I heard the train's whistle again, that shrill, loud pitch in the distance. He flipped me over onto my back and spoke again. "Are you going to be telling anyone about this, boy?" His voice had calmed down, but there was a deep anger there. Calm and intense. I felt one of my teeth fall to the back of my throat. A small mountain of vomit and blood gushed from my mouth as I tried to cough it up. I feebly turned my head and spit it out. "No, Daddy, I ain't telling nobody."
"Good."
My father tossed his shovel aside, scooped me up in his arms, and carried me like I was just a baby. His voice had flipped to that of genuine concern, like any good father's voice.
"You're okay, boy."
He took a mighty big fall off the ladder. "Right, Janice?" He turned to Mrs. Louie, still holding me in his arms. Her face burning from tears, she only nodded rapidly.
"Yes, yes. Are you okay, Daniel? Are you okay, sweetie?"
She rushed over and ran her shaking hands across my tiny battered face. My father pushed me into her arms. "Take him up to the house and into bed and tell Martha what happened, okay? I'll go to the town and fetch a doctor. Quickly now." Mrs. Louie pulled me even closer and ran to the house to get my mother to put me down and be comfortable until the doctor came. Before I blacked out, I remember Mrs. Louie running across the field of my house and the smell of the harvest that filled my nostrils. Mrs. Louie was quietly muttering how sorry she was, and in the distance my eyes caught the slowly moving shape of a black train. I remember the smoke rising from the stack, the slow chug, chug, chug of the wheels and the horrible shriek of the whistle, calling me to darkness. The doctor came and went, but I had no idea. I was unconscious the entire time. A broken hip, 3 broken ribs, 1 dislocated, a cracked skull, 2 missing teeth, 4 broken fingers, 1 broken wrist, and miles of bruises. Other bits of damage appeared over time. I lost hearing and most of the sight out of the right side of my face. On a good day, and I can say I had plenty of them, I had a slight limp, but on a bad day I was practically a cripple. My left hand froze up sometimes, and I couldn't move my fingers with a damn. But I got along fine with my condition. My father was never found out, and the fact that Mrs. Louie never came back around the house only meant she would never speak about it. We all just sort of went on with life. I lived as best I could for 10 years before I heard the whistle again. Now, it wasn't uncommon to see or even hear a train near the farm. Hell, there was a track not more than a mile from my front door, but this train was different. The whistle didn't sound right. It was like a dying rabbit. Nails against a chalkboard and steam spewing out of a kettle all rolled into one. That sound pierces through you and sends shivers down into your very bones. Not a pleasant feeling, in other words. I was 16 and living like my fathers before me, working my hands to leather in the earth. I had spent time at what my wife would later refer to as hick school, but I soon left after my teacher decided I was unteachable. I wasn't unteachable. I just would rather spend time reading or taking something apart or going somewhere I'd never been. The world was my playground and I wanted to play. The thought of leaving my mother alone with my father scared me, though, and I owed it to her to stick around and try to protect her. What my father did to me was only the tip of the iceberg compared to all the other things he did to my mother. I remember lying awake at night, listening to them fighting, my father's booming voice broken up only by the jarring sound of breaking glass, or the cool, clean sound of flesh-on-flesh contact. My mother would be in the kitchen the next day with a few bruises, maybe a cut or two, but she never complained. It was plain for everyone to see, but they never paid it any mind. It's just how things were. I remember it was a pleasant enough summer night, a little humid, but that's just nitpicking. I spent most of the evening out on the porch watching the stars and listening to the creatures of the night as they went about their business. Occasionally I found myself glancing out at the barn. It stood there like a mausoleum in the pale moonlight, an effigy to many things, pain, lost love, hard work, and my family who died on this land before me. My mind wandered to memories of Sandra Hannigan, God rest her soul, and to memories of the shovel bearing down on me, like a locomotive bears down on those endless steel tracks. My mind liked to wander whether or not I want to take the ride. It always has and always will. I remember my father driving up in his truck. The bastard was swerving horribly. Obviously, he'd indulged to his heart's content on Jimmy Magruder's personal moonshine. "What burns blue makes your blues go away, boy," he would always say. I knew he'd be in a fighting mood, and that instinctively made me go to my room. Before I could even reach the stairs, I heard his voice, dripping with white lightning. "Martha! Martha! You come here and welcome me home like a good wife should," he shouted in a slurred fashion, as the ceramic jug in his hand spilled the foul liquor onto the floor. My mother promptly came up from the cellar without a word and greeted him to his liking, kiss on the lips and removal of his coat. As she turned to put his coat on the hook, he reached out and began to grope her. My mother, I will admit, was an attractive woman, but years of beatings had slowly taken the brightness from her eyes, the skip in her step, and the song on her lips. We made quick eye contact, but just a brief moment said it all. "Go to bed, sweetie. Maybe it won't be so bad tonight. Just go to bed." But like most nights, it was the same. Her giving into this predator and his advances just to keep him happy. She suffered through it in silence. God, the things she did to provide for me. I pray every day that she's smiling down on me while he's rotting in hell. My mind quickly wandered back to Sandra Hannigan. Did she suffer in silence? Did she let him take her every night? Or did she kick and scream and bite until she was too tired to go on? I don't know. I can't say. God rest her soul. I pray she fought back. I climbed the stairs to my room, trying to block out the labored breathing of my drunken father in the cold, complacent whimpers of my mother. Lying in my bed, I tried to nod off and sleep, just so it could happen all again the next day. Soon, sleep found me, and I dreamed a dream that haunted me for years, always picking up new details along the way. In it, My father stood above me with a shovel, staring at me with all the fury of God, his eyes black could be. A shovel came down. I closed my eyes in fear, only to open them and see Sandra Hannigan before me, her beautiful, smooth skin now wormy and rotted, her hair still crimson as fresh blood, and a deep black line running along her neck. It's too hard to be looking at, but somehow I can't look away. She hikes up her tattered yellow dress and reveals the further decay of once was a wonderful sight. She speaks to me, her voice as crisp and clear as it was that day. You love me, don't you, Daniel? All the while I hear the slow, methodic chug, chug, chug of a train. Sandra opens her mouth, her cheeks tearing wide open into a disgusting, skeletal smile to speak once more, only her voice isn't there, just a sound that pierces right through, chilling me to the bone, scratching at my soul. A whistle. I woke up, sweating bullets and soaking my shirt and underwear, but it wasn't the dream that woke me. As horrible as it was. No, it was the rumbling in my stomach for release. I didn't need to be told twice before I swiftly jumped out of bed, slipped on a pair of trousers, and descended the stairs quite quickly, nearly tripping on the last step in the dark. I could see my father asleep in his armchair in the family room, his jug tipped over, empty and bone dry. The moonlight shone through the window, and I could see a line of drool fouling from the corner of his open mouth. His head tilted back in a way he always slept when he was in his chair. I quickly shoved on my shoes, rushed out through the front door and off to the outhouse behind the house. The grass swished underneath my feet, and the wind cooled the sweat on my body. I flung the door open and squat down on the splintery seat without a second thought. Let myself relax and let the body do what it is trained to do in that type of situation. I nearly nodded off in the smelly little shack, but something jolted me off my seat. A whistle, low at first, but it grew into a cacophony, like hundreds of screaming voices. I quickly cleaned myself up and hurried outside. There was, in the moonlight, no less than a mile from where I stood, just sitting there in the tracks, which wouldn't have been too uncommon, except there was no switching station out there. Just open land and those endless steel tracks. Like I said, I was a curious boy, and obviously something that had been haunting me for 10 years... was well worth a look. I broke into a run, and the excitement and fear gripping at my heart. I wanted to turn back to the house and tell myself I was just dreaming. But my feet kept moving. Thank God for the moon that night. You could see for miles. As I got nearer to the damn thing, the darker it got. The smoke from the stack crept into the sky and blotted out the light. The bright diamond-like stars in the satin-cloth sky began to disappear, too. I stopped, briefly, panting and sweating, and looked up, only to find myself right there beside it. It was unlike any train I had ever seen. It was black all over, so black it hurt my eyes to look at it directly for too long. The world was also noticeably darker next to the massive machine, as if it was devouring any light that got near it. Most trains that came through were freight trains carrying coal and such to parts unknown. This was a passenger train. The interiors of the cabs were brightly lit, revealing their deep red color scheme. And the people, oh God, the people in the windows. Each one of them just sat there, emotionless and unmoving, like statues of some lost civilization. I tried working my way to the front of the thing, and each car was the same, filled sparsely with unfamiliar frozen faces. One or two passengers did turn to look out their window at me, only to return to their original position. Their eyes were gray and sad. I kept on walking my way towards the engine until something caught my eye. In one of the windows, I spotted my father. I wasn't sure at first, but it had to be. It was my daddy, all right. Daddy! I yelled out, but he didn't turn to look. Daddy! Hey, Daddy! I saw that the entrance to the car was wide open. The light spilled out onto the land. I had to get into that car. Why is he on there? I thought to myself. What is he doing? I hoisted myself onto the metal steps into the car, only to be knocked on my back by a black mass that smelled of oil and smoke. I looked up to see a man standing there in soot-stained overalls. He had greasy white hair jutting out from under his conductor's cap. He stared at me intently before a smile cracked his lips.
"You ain't getting on, boy."
His voice was flighty and uneven. High-pitched, yet low and grumbly at the same time. "Ain't got no ticket." His laugh was unnerving, like the sound of crunching bugs under your foot. "Why are you wanting to get on anyways, boy?" Continued beaming at me, a strange skeletal smile, wide and menacing. I found myself reverting back to that little scared boy in the barn 10 years prior. My daddy's on there. I gotta talk to him. He just bellowed that laugh of his. Boy, lots of people's daddies on this train. No ticket, no ride. He clapped his gloved hands together, black dust puffed out. But please, No ticket, boy, no ride. His voice was becoming angry. That's when I truly saw him. His skin was pale and free of any sort of blemishes, and his eyes, they were on fire, glowing orange like the coals that moved his train. Those fiery eyes burned right through me. "Get out of here, boy. Don't come back till you get yourself a ticket." His teeth, they were jagged and pointed like a dog's. I ain't afraid to say I was scared. In fact, I wet myself right then and there. He just laughed, that crunchy laugh of his. "Diamond, pearl, opal, jade." He chortled and then turned and slammed the doors shut behind him. Soon enough, the pistons started their slow chug, 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 while smoke billowed out of the stack. Smelled like rotten eggs and bloated summer roadkill. I stood there in my own filth, watching the black train slowly pull away. The conductor stuck his head out of the engine booth and yelled back to me over the screech of the locomotive. "Maybe next time, eh, Danny boy?" His eyes burned as brightly as ever. He laid on the whistle. Close up, I could truly hear the sound. It was screaming. Melting steel and burning souls screaming into the night. I could only watch as the train pulled away. The shrieking black behemoth rode those endless steel tracks into the distance and faded away. I walked home, shaken and scared, questioning whether or not I'm truly dreaming, or if all of it was some kind of nightmare. The moon was back out and shining in all its glory. The stars sparkled in the dark folds of the night sky. Finally, reaching home, I numbly pushed the front door open. It groaned in protest, but I paid it no mind. I trudged into the family room, figuring my father would be gone, but there I was, still sitting there. Quickly crossed over to him. My hand shook as I touched his face. It was cold. I saw that it wasn't drool that dribbled out from his lips. It was vomit. My father was dead. I had seen the devil that night. He'd taken my father with him on a slow, screaming ride to hell. My daddy's funeral was like any other, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. The man was buried on holy ground, and nobody but me and my mother ever knew that it was no man, but a monster. I remember how she looked when they lowered him into the cold, hard earth. She had this little smile on her face. No tears, no anguish. Just a little smile. She was free. A few years later, she sold the farm. "I want to go to the city and leave all this behind," she told me. I didn't blame her. I was glad to leave, but I admit I did miss the place once we were gone, and I know she did too. It was a quiet life, a fine life, but she couldn't stand to be in a house where memories ran rampant and hid in every corner, where every shadow whispered to her, reminding her of my father. It was 1942. The world was at war, and I couldn't do nothing but work, building bits and pieces for guns and tanks. Being partially crippled, I was 4F. I heard about how all my childhood friends went over to fight for liberty and came back in boxes. I suppose I was lucky on that part. My mother took up a job in the same munitions plant as me. Propaganda at its best, I suppose. It put a smile on her face, and that's all I needed to know. It was a good thing. We'd been living with her mother in Boston, and life was fine indeed. I liked my grandmother well enough, but she always looked at me like I was a leper. She saw too much of my father in me, I suppose. She hated him for what he'd done to my mother. The beatings were a secret, but she hated my father for taking my mother away. In her mind's eye, a soldier returned from war and knocked up a pretty young woman with the whole world in front of her and stole her back to his home, where the fruit of several steamy nights ended up dying in its sleep. My sister didn't get much of a chance at the world, but I sure did. It wasn't until I started bringing Claire around that my grandmother started to warm up to me a little more. Maybe Granny was finally seeing that I wasn't my father, or maybe she was just going senile, I don't know. I can't say that I didn't love Claire. She was a wonderful woman, but I do know that I saw a hell of a lot of Sandra in her. That blazing crimson hair of hers and those deep green eyes. Maybe it was me mourning for a long-lost love or guilt for never stealing Sandra away from her life. 6 feet of rope. Funny how something so seemingly average can remove someone from your life. I loved Sandra. I did. And so did her daddy. A little too much. She was probably praying that I'd come to her window at night and steal her away, like out of a scene from Romeo and Juliet. She had something inside of her, something horrible, something God forgot about. She wanted it to be something beautiful, and it could never be as such. Poor Sandra, God rest her soul. I loved her, but I loved Claire too. Maybe not in the truly bottomless, romantic sort of way, but I loved her all the same. Claire and I were married at a lovely ceremony in 1945. By then the war was over. Our boys were coming home, and the world began to get even more scared of itself. "The Reds are everywhere," they started saying. I don't know. Men were men, but it's their toys that always end up hurting them. I found work as a mechanic, and Claire was teaching. Money was tight, but we didn't complain. We had an apartment to live in and each other. We didn't need to worry about much else until I got home from the shop and she was waiting for me. "Hey, sweetheart." I cooed in her ear as I kissed her on the back of her neck like I always did when I got home. "I'm late," she said, doing her best to hide a twinkle in her eye. "What?" I said. "I'm late." She drew out the words slowly. I don't know what you mean. She took my hand and placed it on her belly. It hit me like a ton of bricks.
You mean?
Yes. She was trying to hold back her tears and smile, but they broke through anyway.
You mean I'm gonna be...
I stammered.
Uh-huh.
My son was born December 20th, 1949. He was the most beautiful baby boy I ever saw. William Hudson Bronson took after me, just as I had taken after my father. I was determined to get for him and have all the things I never had, but money was tight before, and it wasn't getting any better. My grandmother had died 2 years prior to the birth, and my mother was living all alone, but she delighted in seeing her little Billy B, as she called him, whenever we dropped by. She loved him with all her might. It did me well to see her so happy. Billy had just turned one when I got the news that our old home was back on the market. My mother handed me a check that had all the money she had been saving for the last 10 years. She told me it would be good to go home, to return to my roots, and raise Billy like I'd been raised. I didn't think that was such a good idea. I just knew those memories would be waiting there for me, hiding in the shadows, and waiting for me to let my guard down so they could strangle me. Any ghosts in that house have long since left, my mother said to me. It's a good life. I know the life is hard, very hard at times. But it's in your blood, Daniel. You don't like being a mechanic, do you? Haven't you been aching to get back to the land, to watch the fruits of your work pay off? I did. I did miss the farm life, but I didn't know how much I missed my farm life. We left Billy with my mother while Claire and I made our way back to my childhood home. The town had grown quite a bit. It had everything a modern family would need. When we finally did reach the old farm, my eyes fell on the barn and a deep chill ran through me.
"You okay?"
Claire asked me in that sweet, concerned voice of hers. "A goose walked over my grave, I suppose." The man who owned it most recently was a rich yuppie who thought about trying his hand at farm life but couldn't live without the amenities of the modern man. Still, he'd managed to get the old place fully wired and the plumbing up to date. Not to mention, he'd left behind plenty of farming equipment, brand new decor, and a completely new paint job. It wasn't my home anymore. It hadn't been for a long time. After our tour, Claire got into the car and instantly spilled out her opinion. "We need to buy this house." "You really think so?"
"I do.
I can work at the school in town. You can make a living here, growing corn, raising cows, and doing whatever it is farmers do." "You really want to live here?" I questioned. I did want to come back, but there was too much in my head screaming at me not to come back.
"Yes."
She stared at me intently. She knew that I would crack, like always. She had that special kind of power over me. "Then it's sorted. It's ours." We settled in and we got a new life off to a good start. The land was good. The crops grew like weeds, and Billy was taking a liking to the open air. It wasn't long after our first harvest that Claire was late once more. We had our baby girl, Esther Mary Bronson, in the summer of 1953. She took after her mother in spades, a slice of the American dream. I found myself walking out to the railroad tracks every now and again. I don't know what I expected to see. Maybe it was sort of my way of trying to make sense of something so unbelievable. I never told anyone, never once. The devil and his hellbound train were my secret to keep. I wasn't crazy. I prayed to God I wasn't crazy. Sometimes, late at night, I hear a train whistle pierce out in the night. The slow chug, 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 pushing the metal beast along those endless steel tracks. Sometimes, I swear, just under those whistles, I can hear the screams. We led a fine life, indeed. Billy grew into a man before my very eyes, and Esther blossomed into a beautiful young woman more and more every day. It was 1968, and another war was going on halfway around the world, but it didn't bother me none. That is, not till Billy came to me and said he was going to join the army. He wanted to fight for his country, he said. Claire had a fit, as expected, but my boy had his mind set, and he'd be damned if anybody was going to change it. We got his letters every week, and every week we'd write back. I was sleeping when the dream came again for the first time in years. In it, my father was standing over me again, holding the shovel just like before. His eyes burned orange like coal. The shovel started coming down on me. Then the scene melted away, and I was with Sandra, my lovely rotting Sandra, in the hayloft, exposing herself to me in that same morbid manner. "You love me, don't you, Daniel?" she cooed. "You know I do," I replied. Her rotting lips formed a smile. Her gaping maw opened to reveal an unimaginable darkness. And from the darkness came a low whistle, slowly building into deafening screams. I woke up, sweating bullets, my night clothes soaked through. I didn't have to use the bathroom. It was the whistle, cutting out into the night, calling me like a sailor to the rocks. I silently slipped from my bed and down the stairs. Each step creaked slightly under my weight. I slipped on my shoes, flung the front door open, and started running. The wind chilled me slightly in the autumn night air. My mind raced with the memories that reached out not from the corners or shadows of my home, but from my past. Reaching out, they seemed determined to hold me down and suffocate me. It was the same as it was all those years ago. The smoke plumes rose from the engine before falling to the ground and lingering like a thick black fog. The black, deep metal glared back at me as I walked along the side of the hulking beast. The devil stood outside of a car, watching me as I approached, his eyes burning brightly with enthusiasm. "Diamond, pearl, opal, and jade. Ha, ha, ha. Danny boy has returned. Still no ticket, I see." His voice shuddered through me, but I pressed on. "Why are you here?" I demanded to know.
"Oh, my, Danny boy. We all have a job to do. This is just my job. But why are you here?"
In that moment, I heard my father sneaking into my voice, the same calm and quiet anger.
"Dad?"
A voice from inside the car rang out like a bell. Out of the open doorway stepped my son, Billy, clad in his official army gear and looking quite confused.
"Dad?"
"Billy." The word got caught in my throat. I ran over and held him close to me, never wanting to let him go.
"Billy, why are you on this train?"
"Don't know. I remember my squad was walking through the jungle, then there was this little white flash, and I woke up on the train. What are you doing here?"
"I don't quite know myself," I smiled slightly. I squeezed him tighter. "It's good to see you, boy."
"How touching," the devil spoke up. "You have 5 minutes, Billy boy." The devil stepped into the car and made his way to the engine. Once I knew he was gone, I grabbed Billy's hand and tried to pull him away.
"Come on, son. We gotta get you home. He pulled away from me. No. Billy. Dad. If this is what everyone else aboard is saying, then I can't leave. I can't, Daddy. We can go home right now. Tell your mother you're home and... No. I belong here, and who knows? Maybe this train don't just go to hell. Maybe it makes a stop off somewhere else. I don't know. Billy, I... Daddy, I heard from friends of mine who went home. They got problems, Daddy. I'd rather be dead than mangled and screwed up in the head. It's okay, son. We stood silently for a long moment, staring at each other, trying to think of the words to say.
All aboard!
Love you, I whispered, holding back tears. Love you too, my boy said. The last words I ever heard him say. Goodbye. The black behemoth pulled away from me once more and went screaming down those endless steel tracks. I waved farewell to my son long after the train was out of sight. Even after its screaming whine disappeared from the night air, I watched. I prayed. That week we got another letter. Only this time it wasn't from Billy. Claire was inconsolable. For days she wouldn't leave the house and just laid around crying and wailing that she should have kept him here at home, should have kept him safe. She left me not more than a year after that. She said she couldn't stand looking at me and seeing Billy in my face. She could no longer stand the sight of me, and she became cruel. I couldn't join her in her sorrow, in her pain. I got to say my goodbyes. I got my closure. I don't blame her for the way she felt. But when she left, she took my daughter away too. I haven't seen either in years. Many years. I did the best I could. I tried to live life as best I could with what I had. I was a good father. I was a good son. I was a good husband. None of that means a hill of beans in the long run, though. We all end up in the cold, hard earth feeding the maggots and creepy crawlies that haunt our nightmares. And I can hear it now. The screaming. The screaming in the darkness. Calling out to me. I've seen a lot of things in my life. Some things I'm more proud of than others. As a boy, nothing could satisfy my appetite for the world around me. The train is out there, and I've finally got my ticket. I suppose the only thing left to do now is take a ride.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience. And they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groshek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.